The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. My topic today is going to be conflict and sympathy. How to understand sympathy in terms and in light of conflict. And these are my thoughts. This is a very big topic. I'm not going to cover every little base, but I will give you a few things to ponder on, I hope. Every year in France, in Lourdes, there's a pilgrimage. I think most of you have heard that Lourdes is a very famous place for pilgrimages, and it's been a famous place for many, many years. And the reason is because in the 19th century, there was a young woman. She was 14 years old. She was a nun. Her name was Bernadette. And she was out by the creek picking up sticks for firewood. And in that area of France, there's a lot of caves, and there was a cave right there. And so she was picking up sticks, and she got close to this cave, and she had a vision of the Virgin Mary. And this is an uneducated, very young woman who was not, highly regarded. She was just very poor. And as a nun, she was didn't have a lot of status, so she was kind of a nobody. But the Virgin Mary visited her. This is kind of the way the story goes. And asked if Bernadette could come back for 2 weeks and come back and visit the cave. So Bernadette agreed to do that. She didn't know who this woman was, this vision she was having. But she came back and she heard over the course of 2 weeks a lot of really good teachings for her. And out of that 2 weeks, somewhere along the line, a spring sprung up in the cave. And it wasn't there before. It sprung up, and to this day, it's still, the waters are still flowing clear from that spring in the cave. So that's how the pilgrimage got started. And in the course of that, people came to the cave with the thought of kind of touching that universal, that Virgin Mary or something else that wasn't of the world. So they just wanted to drink the water. They wanted to bathe in the water. And it became a really popular place for Catholics, okay? And this was in the 19th century. And so this place has been popular. I wouldn't be surprised if some of you haven't been there before, because there's millions of people that go there every year. Now what I want to do is talk about one weekend in each year in May that has happened for, 60 years. This will be the 60th year. And this event is to give soldiers a chance to go to Lourdes and have their own retreat there, their own pilgrimage. And it started back after World War II, after the war in Europe. And it just started kind of naturally where some of the French soldiers wanted to go to this place and try to find healing. And they were mostly Catholics at this point. And the reason was because they had just gone through war and couldn't make sense out of it. They were wounded physically and spiritually, and they wanted some resolution, some answers, some help. So this is how it started. And after that, interestingly, I think anyway, is that more and more French soldiers began to come. This was, in after World War II. And by 1957, the number of people that wanted to go there had started to grow and grow and grow. And it wasn't just the soldiers for the weekend, but the pilgrims from all over the world. Eventually it started to happen. But what 1957 was a real critical year, because what happened is that it wasn't just for French soldiers, it was for German soldiers as well. Interesting, right? That were just fighting World War II, and they were invited to come in 1957 to go to Lourdes on this pilgrimage. Well, this evidently started something of an international flavor of not just the soldiers going there to heal themselves, but to also find reconciliation with people and soldiers of other countries that were their enemies. To find a resolution of people on one side and people on the other side, and trying to make sense out of a sometimes horrific situation. So it grew from a national event into an international event. And last year they had 10,000 pilgrims for this one particular weekend from 40 different nations. And I looked at, the reason I'm talking about this is I just happened to look at a video in our library. It was a documentary for entertainment, and it was about this very thing. And it just got me thinking about the wonderfulness of that. Even though it's a different religion, in a way, it really isn't. Okay, So, and the reason is, it's not just because I'm a Buddhist and they're basically a Catholic situation, but they have expanded this pilgrimage to include. The requirements to attend the pilgrimage is the event is for non-wounded, wounded, ill, or injured military men and women. As for the religious or spiritual requirements, applicants should be spiritually motivated to participate as a pilgrim. Period. So it really opens things up to a wide range of all different kinds of people. But they want to have people come because they're going on a pilgrimage. So it's not restricted to a religion or to any religion at all, even though it is a very Catholic place. So that opens things up quite wide. And of course, you can think, well, of course, the reason that the soldiers, the men and women, would go is because they want to find healing. And it's very interesting that people often associate Lourdes with miracles, right? Taking the waters and all that stuff. And yes, these things actually do happen. And the reason I can say that is because in this video, they have, believe it or not, a medical clinic right on the grounds of the temple or the pilgrimage site. And the medical clinic is devoted to people who say they've had miraculous cures. And so what they do is, and what that means is, so they have been diagnosed with an illness, and the illness has scientifically been proven to not be there anymore. So they take x-rays. They're very scientific about this. And they, find out if the cure is just temporary or forever, and I kind of wonder about that. But just, in other words, it's not just a temporary thing that happened. And they have they had a room with files and files and files of these cures that had happened over the years. And the doctor just said that these things, he is scientifically minded, doctor, that's his training. He said, these things do happen. And he said, and I don't know why. And he just left it at that. He said, they do happen, and there's no real explanation for it. Okay? So these things do happen. However, for the most part, most of the millions and millions of people that have gone there, the cure isn't a miracle in that way. But what happens is that oftentimes people especially these soldiers, and I'll go into this a little bit more, find that they can start to heal. And it isn't so much about their physical wounds. And those are, you know, they have, in this day and age, available to most of them, they have really good medical help. But those kinds of things, you know, are issues, but they can be dealt with to a certain point. But quite honestly, there's just a lot that some of those wounds from wars cannot do. So there is that part of it. In other words, their wounds, or physical wounds, are permanent. Okay, like they had interviews with. These were from recent wars, like the Iraqi war, where somebody would lose both their legs from a suicide bomb, or anyway, it goes. They're really real situations that I think any of us would say would be really, really tough to deal with, take in, and try to understand what had just happened. And that's a base here that I want to talk, just emphasize a couple of times. Our conflicts give rise to our attempts to understand, and thus accept the conditions that don't make sense to us in an accepting way. It's not that so much that these things do happen, but it's more the why. And I think that's where people stumble on that. And we can certainly sympathize with soldiers, but I find that kind of looking at conflict is something that we all are familiar with, right? It's because we don't understand why, what's happened. Because if we could, in a way that was acceptable, then we could move into a healing process. So oftentimes what happens, and this isn't a lot, soldiers come to the pilgrimage and they aren't ready to give up their anger, or willing to trust is really what it comes down to. That there is a healing that can take place in their grief and their anguish. On the other hand, a lot of times what happens is, and it is common, where they say, well, I don't know that I'm healed or that I'm healing, but I know that there's a greater power than myself in the world. And for me, that's the point where they can begin to the long process of healing, because their pain and suffering can begin to soften a bit, because it's couched in a bigger picture than just what happens. And here's some accounts of what they're dealing with. At the very end, they're there for a weekend, and so they do a lot of ceremonies, and they have parades. They bring back the pride of wearing. Let me see if I can find it. Wearing a uniform, which to us doesn't seem like it's a whole big deal, but for these people, these men and women, it is a big deal. So they have a chance to have parades and their music, and it gives them a sense of. Wearing their uniforms again in a way that is honoring who they are and what they have done for each other. But the thing is that I find interesting is it's like the Olympics, where you have one country followed by another country, followed by another country, followed by another country. So it's not just national pride. It's got a different flavor about it, because they're all very, and they look really good. They look really, decked out. Looks great, but it's not just so it's this whole parade of all these different countries and these these uniforms, and they're doing their music and their military marches and things like that. That's one thing they do, and they also visit, because of the popularity of Lourdes, there's all these different cathedrals, they're not even churches, they're cathedrals, and some of them are gigantic. So they do different gatherings in there, and they hear different teachings, and they have a lot of volunteers that actually help them through the weekend to just maneuver and learn to kind of be a group together, all 10,000, which you can imagine what that would be logistically like. A lot. But they manage it. They have one underground cathedral type place that it can take something like 40,000 people, which is like the largest space in the world. But it's just, I know, I kind of went, what? But it's with the hope of bringing all these people together and not excluding anybody. So at the end of the weekend, they also have time to socialize. So this is not just, a religious or, it's not all that kind of ceremonies and rituals and things like that. But they have a time to drink beer together and, be at ease and tell their stories. And they find that quite helpful because it is nice to be in a group of people that have similar experiences to your own. Some of them find that very, very healing. But at the end of the weekend, the soldiers have the opportunity to speak about what Lourdes has meant to them. And it's a very stark contrast to the horrors they've seen. And this is, not mincing what happened to them, but their buddies being blown apart beside them, their own blood spurting from arteries straight up in the air. One soldier said he had felt worthless, like I wasn't enough. Like I'd be better off dead. For this soldier visiting Lourdes, help him to deepen his faith and honor the sacrifice of the soldiers killed right beside him. Because of the soldiers who died beside him, he was able to go to Lourdes and speak about his own experience and hopefully to help other soldiers with their healing. So, in a way, it's not a lost cause. Because that one particular soldier survived, and he was able then, he just made his way to Lourdes. It was just something he needed to do. But then in turn, he's turning around and helping others with a similar problem. And some of the soldiers just say they... Another wounded soldier said he felt the love and acceptance from other soldiers, as well as the kindness and compassion from the volunteers. So it sounds like the experience for these people is helpful. And I think to myself, how do we relate to somebody who's had a war experience? And it's not necessarily something that we can relate to in a very realistic way. You can't, in other words, it's not something like, oh, I understand what you've gone through, because that's really not true. But I do think there is a way that we can relate to people, all of us, in particular in those kinds of situations. People that are different, people that are on the margins of lives. And what I'm going to bring this down to, we're going to talk about sympathy now, is that for ourselves, each and every one of us can say, I know what conflict is within ourselves. I looked up the word conflict, and it means to strike together or opposing action of incompatibilities. And I thought that was a good definition. In our conflicts here, and all of us in this room, it's the same thing. Our conflicts give rise to our attempts to understand and then accept conditions that don't make sense to us in an accepting way. The same thing as the soldiers. There's really no great difference between us and them. And I want to read something that Dogen wrote about this in the Shobo Genzo. Manifesting sympathy means not making differences, not treating yourself as different, and not treating others as different. When we really understand what manifesting sympathy means, we will see that self and other are the same. And there is a common ground with suffering. Yeah. It's something it's interesting. It's really a wonderful thing that we can all relate to what that means. I mean, because we can learn the teaching from it, we understand that there's a common ground. And the common ground that I see at the moment anyway is that we hurt and we really don't understand why in a healing way. And in Buddhism, we happen to have something called the four wisdoms, which are charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. And the four wisdoms give us ways to discover how to help others and also represent the bodhisattva's aspirations. We can use the teachings of sympathy as one of the four wisdoms, and the teaching of the wisdom of sympathy can give us direction of aspiration of ways to behave as a Buddha would behave. So this is taking it out of the realm of feeling pity for soldiers or people that are in really dire straits, and giving it a spiritual practice of sympathy. Because quite honestly, pity isn't a great help to anybody. If you've ever had felt somebody was feeling pity for yourself, you kind of, I don't know about that, you know. But sympathy is different. And, you know, it's not that, you know, having pity for something, there's a good intention there. But I think there's a better way to go. And I looked at these four wisdoms, the one on sympathy, as a way to help us understand what we can do. So sympathy in practice. One thing I keep coming back to, and this is really simple, but I think there's a lot to be looked at and explored here, and that is listening. How many times have we heard that? And this is listening wholeheartedly to what people are saying. And an example of not really listening is when your mind is on something else, and you're not really listening to what people are saying. You know, and this is things that I think a lot of people have the habit of doing, how you can partially take care of a situation that's in the moment, but your mind is really elsewhere, and you can almost feel it when you're talking to people that that's happening. And the other one is our judgments. Judgments about the other person and how we bring that to the situation. And I wonder about not doing that, but looking to see where we do that and how that affects the way that we interact with people. And I think what the sympathy and practice is pointing to is not some grand gesture in a way, but just simply being willing to be with the situation in a wholehearted way. And that doesn't mean to have an agenda. It doesn't mean that you're going to help the person out. It doesn't mean that you're going to be a sympathizer. It goes beyond that. Because I believe what these soldiers and we all want is to be, just have that, excuse me. I just remembered something that it brought up some emotions. So, anyway, it's just to be with something without an agenda. And what I brought up is I was with my mother for a few days before she died. And it was totally unpredicted. She was in her wheelchair. It was lunchtime, so she had a little tray in front of her, and I was sitting on the bed just visiting. And we were not facing each other, which is a good idea. We were kind of looking in the same direction at the food, which is a nice thing. And so we just started being like playful with it in a certain kind of way. Oh, what's in your salad? Oh, can I have a bite of that? Oh, sure. Oh, your meal looks really good. Are you enjoying it? So we just enjoyed that moment together. Not a big thing. We weren't trying to work anything out. You know, we weren't trying to do anything. We were just there kind of like kids almost. And it was just being, and it was simple, very simple stuff, not predicted, not planned for. But there's something really special about that for me. And I don't know if it has to do with sympathy, but it has. The point is that there was an agenda there. And I think those moments can arise, in, you know, just at any time. You can't go looking for them, but they can arise, and they're invaluable. They're precious for both the person that is, you know, both people that are interacting with each other. And it's just like this coming together that's really a normal, natural thing, and really not a big deal. You know? I just feel like we could use a little more of that stuff. So I don't feel like practicing sympathy is something that we have to be heroic about or do anything more than want to learn what it means for ourselves without getting caught up in the idea of doing good or, you know, I am a sympathetic person. But letting go of all that stuff and learning just to be present in the moment, which is what, you know, we want to do in our meditation practice anyway, is just to bring ourselves back and to be there with the situations as they arise and trust that what arises we can take care of in a way that is the best that we can do without that expectation of it's got to be this or it has to be that, it has to be great or this is going to be awful. But trust that there is a bigger picture. We're a part of it. And we can move and live in a way that entrusts our way to be the big way. We can open up to that. And that's how true healing takes place. So that's my talk. Thank you. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha.